Put the clusters in a big bowl, preferably one that can hold 5 liters of liquid. 2. Scrub the lemons under hot water, slice them and add them to the clusters in the bowl. 3. Bring the water to the boil and add the citric acid and sugar. 4. Pour the hot water into the bowl containing the elderflower clusters and lemon slices. 5. Cover the bowl with a lid and let the lemonade rest for 3 days. 6. Strain the liquid and pour it into bottles. Store in the fridge. St. John's Eve falls on June 23rd, and on that evening, Danes celebrate the summer solstice. This is my favorite tradition. In Denmark, the sun sets in June, close to 11 p.m., on a night that never lets go of the light completely. As the sun sets, there is a bittersweet recognition that from the next day, we will start the slow descent into darkness as the days shorten. This is the perfect evening for a picnic. Grab your friends and family and light a bonfire. They're usually lit relatively late because of their light, so if you need to entertain the kids during the wait, this is a great evening for an egg and spoon race. July, summer picnic. July is when Danes really love to get out and enjoy nature. The weather is warm and the evenings are still long. This is the perfect time of year for a picnic by the sea, in a meadow, or in a park. The choice is yours, but get out of town. Invite your family, friends, neighbors, or the people who just moved in down the street. Make it a potluck event, so everybody brings a dish or two to share. Potluck dinners are usually more hygge because they are more egalitarian. They are about sharing food and sharing the responsibility and chores. August. The Perseid meteor shower. Bring blankets for a night under the stars. While the light nights of this time of year may not be the best in which to watch stars, the Perseid meteor shower occurs in mid-August, usually reaching peak activity around the 11th to the 13th. Look northeast for the Perseus constellation, which has Andromeda to the east and Cassiopeia to the north. If you have kids, this is a great time to bring a book of stories from Greek mythology to read while you wait for the shooting stars. For people in the southern hemisphere, the Eta Aquarius meteor shower is an option. It usually peaks between late April and mid-May. September. Mushroom foraging. Mushrooms appear mainly in the autumn, but can be found from late summer. There is no better taste than food you have grown, caught, or foraged yourself. And it has a high hygge factor. Bring family and friends for a forage excursion to the forest. Warning. Eating the wrong sort of mushrooms can be deadly, so find an experienced mushroom forager and ask them to come along on a forage. Many communities organize group tours. October. Chestnuts. It is chestnut season. If you have kids, take them chestnut hunting and use the chestnuts to make animal figurines. For the adults, buy edible chestnuts. Make a cross with a knife in the pointy end and roast them in the oven at 200 degrees for about 30 minutes until the skins open and the insides are tender. Peel off the tough outside skin and add a bit of butter and salt. If you just want quality hygge time by yourself, pick up some mandarins, roasted chestnuts, and a copy of A Movable Feast by Hemingway. It is set in 1920s Paris when Hemingway was working as a penniless writer. November. Soup cook-off. Winter is coming. It is time to get out that old soup recipe and find new ones. Invite family and friends over for a soup cook-off. Each person brings ingredients for a soup to feed one person. Take turns preparing small dishes of different soups, enough for everyone to try. I usually make a pumpkin ginger soup, which works really well with a bit of crème fraîche. If you want to do something extra as a host, bake some homemade bread. The smell of freshly baked bread is definitely hygge. December. Glück and Äpfelskiver. Pancake puffs. This is hygge high season. The consumption of candles and confectionery soars, as do BMIs. This is also prime time for Glück. You can hear the recipe in Chapter 4. Start out well in advance by soaking those raisins in port and invite your friends and family over for an afternoon or evening of Glück and Æbleskiver. You can hear the recipe for those also in Chapter 4. Chapter 9. Hygge on the cheap. The best things in life are free. There is nothing fancy, expensive, or luxurious about a pair of ugly woolen hygge socks, and that is a vital feature of the anatomy of hygge. Champagne and oysters may be many things, but hygge is not one of them. Hygge is humble and slow. It's choosing rustic over new, simple over posh, and ambience over excitement. In many ways, hygge might be the Danish cousin to slow and simple living. It's wearing your pajamas and watching Lord of the Rings the day before Christmas. It is sitting in your window watching the weather while sipping your favorite tea. And it is looking into the bonfire on summer solstice surrounded by your friends and family while your twist bread slowly bakes. Simplicity and modesty are central to hygge, but they are also considered virtues when it comes to Danish design and culture. Simplicity and functionality are the main ingredients of Danish design classics, and the Danes' love affair with modesty means that bragging about your accomplishment and flashing a Rolex are not only frowned upon and considered poor taste, but spoil the hygge. In short, the more bling, the less hygge. Consequently, you can also play the hygge card as an exit strategy if you enter a high-end restaurant you can't afford. Shouldn't we find a place that is more hyggelig? Is a perfectly valid reason to find a cheaper establishment. Not Noma, though. That restaurant is really hyggelig. It has the right lighting. Hygge is about appreciating the simple pleasures in life and can be achieved on a shoestring budget. The poem and song The Happy Day of Swante by Benny Andersen is famous in Denmark. It's all about savoring the moment and enjoying simple pleasures. Look, real daylight soon. Red sun and waning moon. She takes a shower for me whom it's good to be. Life's not bad, for it's all we got, and the coffee's almost hot. Okay, so Danes might be better at hygge than poetry, but one of the most consistent patterns in happiness research is how little difference money makes. Of course, if you can't afford to eat, money is of the utmost importance. But if you're not battling poverty or struggling to make ends meet, an additional £100 per month is not going to move the needle when it comes to happiness. This fits well with hygge. You cannot buy the right atmosphere or a sense of togetherness. You cannot hygge if you are in a hurry or stressed out. And the art of creating intimacy cannot be bought by anything but time, interest, and engagement in the people around you. Hygge can and often will be about eating or drinking, but the more it counteracts consumption, the more hyggelig it is. The more money and prestige is associated with something, the less hyggelig it becomes. The simpler and more primitive an activity is, the more hyggelig it is. Drinking tea is more hyggelig than drinking champagne. Playing board games is more hyggelig than playing computer games. And home-cooked foods and biscuits are more hyggelig than bought ones. In short, if you want hygge, there is no amount of money that you can spend which will increase the hygge factor. At least, not if you are buying anything more expensive than a candle. Hygge is an atmosphere which is not only unimproved by spending more money on it, but rather, in some ways, the opposite. Hygge may be bad for market capitalism, but it may prove to be very good for your personal happiness. Hygge is appreciating the simple pleasures in life and can be achieved with very little money. Here are 10 examples how the best hygge in life is free or almost so. 10 inexpensive hygge activities. 1. Bring out the board games. We live in the age of Netflix, Candy Crush, and an endless supply of electronic entertainment. We hang out with technology instead of with each other. However, playing board games is still popular, in part because of the hygge. Every year, my friend Martin organizes the Mother of Board Games, a game of Axis and Allies. Set in the Second World War, it is essentially a complex version of the game Risk. The game usually lasts for about 14 hours, and Martin usually leaves his very understanding girlfriend in a hotel for the night. We make the evening into more than simply playing a game. There'll be classical music on, mostly Wagner and Beethoven, and smoke from cigars fill the room, so you can barely see our group of grown men in uniforms. Admittedly, we may take it to an extreme level, but we do it for the hygge. But why are board games hygge? Well, first of all, it is a social activity. You play board games together. You create common memories and strengthen social bonds. All of Martin's friends still remember the moment in the 2012 game when the Allies suddenly realized that Moscow would fall. In addition, for many of us who grew up with Monopoly or Trivial Pursuit, board games are full of nostalgia and take us back to simpler times. There is also a slowness to the activity, especially if the game takes 14 hours. Attentionability and an air of hygge. 2. Pantry party. This is one of my favorites. Invite your friends over to your house for an afternoon or an evening of cooking and hygge. The rules are simple. Every person brings ingredients to make something that goes in the pantry or the fridge. Strawberry jam, sweet pickle relish, homemade ketchup, chicken stock, limoncello, pumpkin soup, you name it. Everybody also brings jars, cans, bottles, or containers in a shape that will allow them to store a bounty of homemade treats. The beauty of it is the diversity. Instead of having 10 servings of pumpkin soup, you now have mango chutney, ginger beer, pickled chili, baba ganoush, a loaf of sourdough bread, plum marmalade, elderflower cordial, walnut aquavit, and raspberry sorbet. Yum. 3. TV night. One of my best friends and I always watch Game of Thrones together. We are on season 3, so could everybody please shut up about who died? Every 2 weeks or so, we watch 2 episodes, no more. I know it's borderline Amish in the age of Netflix not to binge watch a whole season of your favorite show once it's released, but it has some advantages. Firstly, it brings TV back to being something more sociable. Secondly, it allows you to look forward to something on a regular basis. So restrain yourself from binging and invite friends over for weekly viewings of a specific TV show. 4. Set up a mini library in your shared stairway or elsewhere in the neighborhood. An inexpensive and sustainable way to make the shared spaces in your building or local neighborhood a little bit more hyggelig is to build a small library. Find a rustic dresser or some shelves and put them in your stairway. You may want to ask for permission first. Put a handful or more of the books you have already read in the library, but let your neighbors help you increase the selection of titles by following the principle of leaving a book whenever you take one. Being greeted with a display of books when you enter your stairway is a more hyggelig way of returning home. Also, it may encourage more hygge interaction among the tenants in your building. 5. Pétanque. Surely, one of your mates has a set of boules lying around. Apart from being a wonderful excuse to drink pastis, if you haven't tried it before, it's delicious. Playing pétanque is a great way of hanging out with family and friends. The game is informal and slow, so it allows for conversation at the same time and there is something to watch while you talk. Find the nearest park with a stretch of gravel you can use as a pétanque court, and bring blankets and a picnic basket. 6. Make a fire. A fire is definitely part of the hygge equation, and so is the slow preparation of very unfussy food. But it is also the togetherness around the fire, the fact that there is no need to keep the conversation going because you have the sound of the fire. Now, the fire has burnt down and the embers are ready. You have found a suitable straight stick and cleared the bark. At the end of that will hold the bread. Wrap the bread tightly around the stick and place it over the glowing embers. People are gathered around the fire now, in a close circle that opens out a little as the smoke changes direction. Your eyes hurt from the smoke, your hand hurts from being close to the fire, your bread is turning black on the outside, yet remaining unbaked on the inside. But it doesn't get any more hyggelig than this. 7. Outdoor movies. Many cities offer outdoor film screenings during the summer. In Copenhagen, they take place during August. As in June and July, it is simply too bright in the evenings to show movies. The sound is usually difficult to hear. You sit kind of uncomfortably on the ground without back support. And the people who are bright enough to bring small chairs set up camp right in front of you and thus block some of the view of the screen. However, it is still total hygge. I often go with a couple of friends, with set up camp, eat some food, drink some wine, talk, and wait for the movie to start. 8. Swap party. Remember that lamp you have in your basement and have been meaning to put on eBay for 2 years now? Or that extra blender you and your spouse now have since you decided to move in together? Why not get rid of it by swapping it for something that you do need? And have a hygge evening at the same time. Invite friends and family over for a swap party. The rules are simple. Each person brings something which they don't use anymore, but which might be of value to someone else. Beyond being wallet and eco-friendly, it is also a nice opportunity to clean out your wardrobe, kitchen cabinet, basement, or wherever you store your never uses. Furthermore, it might be more convenient and fun to swap with friends than spending a weekend pushing your junk at the flea market or uploading an advert online. 9. Sledding. In the wintertime, it is easy to feel stuck inside. And while it can be hygge to relax with your book and a cup of tea, it is even more hygge after you have spent a day in the snow. So gather a group of people and head for the hills. If you have a beautiful wooden sleigh stashed in the basement, which you can bring, great, but cheaper options exist. You can use a sturdy plastic bag to sleigh down a hill. Sledding is free and fun. Bring a winter picnic basket with tea or mulled wine for afterwards. Don't drink and sleigh. 10. Play. In many ways, some of the activities mentioned, like sledding and board games, fall into the same category, play. We loved them when we were kids, but for some reason we stop doing them when we become grown-ups. Adults are not supposed to play. We're supposed to stress, have worries, and be too busy dealing with life's problems. But according to a study undertaken by Princeton University and led by Alan Krueger, professor in economics and public affairs there, we are happiest when we are involved in engaging leisure activities. One of our issues as adults is that we become too focused on the results of an activity. We work to earn money, we go to the gym to lose weight, we spend time with people to network and further our careers. What happened to doing something just because it's fun? So if you can't remember the last time you had fun, then remember The Shining. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Social activities such as sports, hiking, partying, and playing with children are the top scorers in the study. Chapter 10. Hygge Tour of Copenhagen. Hygge Safari. If you should visit Copenhagen, you might want to visit some of these hyggelig places. Nyhavn. New Harbor. This used to be a dodgy part of town with rowdy sailors and ladies of pleasure. Today, you can visit one of the many restaurants for a pickled herring and snaps. If that is not your thing, and if the weather is nice, do like the locals and buy a few beers from a shop, have a seat at the bulwark, and watch the city go by. Nicholas. Dive into the cream. Remember the importance of cakes? If there was an El Camino for cake, La Glace would be the Santiago de Compostela Cathedral. La Glace was established in 1870 and is the oldest confectionery shop in Denmark. Tivoli Gardens. The Tivoli Gardens were founded in 1843 and are a classic attraction in Copenhagen, where many citizens purchase annual passes to the gardens. While many people visit during the summer, the best time for hygge is when Tivoli dresses up for Christmas and New Year's Eve, usually from mid-November until January. This is a celebration of light. Several hundred thousand lights turn the garden into a magical place in the winter darkness, and you can enjoy some glück near one of the bonfires in the garden and get warm by the fireplace at Nimp Bar. Rowboat in Christianshavn. Christianshavn is part of the city center in Copenhagen. but it is separated from the rest of the center by the inner harbor. It is dominated by canals and may remind you a little of Amsterdam. The best way to experience this part of town is by renting a rowboat and rowing along the canals. Bring blankets, wine, and a picnic basket. Gråbrødre Torv. Being surrounded by the old houses here will transport you back centuries. This hyggelig square gets its name from the monastery of the Grey Brothers, Gråbrødre, established in 1238. There are plenty of cozy restaurants in the square. At Peder Oxe, you can get classic Danish smørbrød and enjoy the fireplace. Even one of the hairdressing salons has a fireplace, and a French bulldog, who will happily sleep on your lap while you have your hair cut. Total hygge. You might also be lucky enough to see a full pig roast at the square. Værnedamsvej. At the road called Værnedamsvej, cars zigzag between cyclists and pedestrians. This short street will make you slow down your pace, smell the flowers and the coffee. Florists, cafes, wine bars, and interior design shops makes this a wonderful place to spend a lazy and hyggelig afternoon. A smørbrød place. Smørbrød means literally spread bread. It is an open sandwich on rye bread. Danes are huge fans of rye bread and is usually one of the first things they miss when they are living abroad. Some expats living in Denmark will, however, refer to the bread as the devil's sandals, as they really dislike the taste and find the bread tough to chew. In all regards, smørbrød is a truly Danish lunch experience. Smørbrød can have an almost limitless number of toppings, from herring to raw beef, egg, and seafood, and some have colorful names like the veterinarian's night food. Smørbrød is usually served with beer and snaps. In Copenhagen, you will find many traditional smørbrød places, and such a lunch will surely get the hygge going. Library Bar. At the Plaza Hotel, near the central train station, you will find the Library Bar, which opened in 1914. Here are sofas, wooden panels, leather-bound books, and really hyggelig lighting. The bar features live music from time to time, but on a quiet night, it is well suited for deep conversation. If you visit during Christmas, you will find a Christmas tree hanging upside down from the ceiling. Chapter 11. Christmas. It's the most hyggelig time of year. For many people, Danes included, Christmas is a wonderful time. However, wonderful is far from the only word used to describe Christmas. If you ask people of any nationality to describe Christmas in one word, adjectives like happy, cheerful, warm, and heartfelt would probably surface. Danes would agree with a lot of these, but they would object. The most fitting word is missing. You forgot hyggelig. In Denmark, in one month of the year, the days are so short you will be lucky to catch a glimpse of the sun. Riding your bike to and from work in the cold and wet and in complete darkness, you begin to question why anybody ever thought that settling in Denmark would be a good idea. Yes, I know. In Denmark it is not minus 30 degrees outside, nor are we troubled with hurricanes or tsunamis. But living here, you do get the sense that the weather gods have taken a certain disliking to the Danes, that they want us to feel miserable and uncomfortable at least one month a year. As unlikely as it sounds, this is the season of hygge in Denmark. Danes simply will not let the weather or the laws of nature define their emotional well-being. Therefore, instead of going into hibernation, which does indeed seem appealing on damp December mornings, Danes have decided to make the best of things. Even though it is possible to hygge all year round, only once a year is hygge the ultimate goal of an entire month. Without achieving hygge, a Dane's toil for the Christmas project is redundant. Chestnuts, fireplace, friends and family coming together around a table of delicious treats, decorations of red, green and gold, the fresh scent of pine from the Christmas tree, carols everybody knows, and the broadcasting of the very same TV shows as last year and every year before that. These are features of a fairly ordinary Christmas all over the world. From Dallas to Durban, people sing along to the words of Last Christmas. From Dublin to Dubai, people know the plot of A Christmas Carol. This is no less true in Denmark. Indeed, there are Christmas traditions which are specifically Danish. But a Danish Christmas is not considerably different from a German, French, or British one in terms of activities or in traditions. What is different in Denmark, though, is that a Christmas in Denmark will always be planned, thought of, and evaluated in relation to the concept of hygge. At no other time of the year will you hear Danes mentioning hygge as much. It is literally mentioned at any given opportunity. And, of course, Danish includes a compound word, julehygge, Christmas hygge, which is both an adjective and a verb. Do you want to come over for some julehygge? In this chapter, I will try to outline a recipe for a proper, hyggelig Christmas, a perfect Danish Christmas, which in itself is a daunting task. Danes hold their Christmas dear, and I'm sure a lot of Danes will disagree with the elements of Christmas I'm going to mention. However, most will probably recognize more than one element from their own traditions. Family and friends. Every year in the second half of December, a full-blown migration takes place in Denmark. People originally from other parts of Denmark, who usually live in Copenhagen, pack their stuff, plus tons of presents, and jump on a train towards their hometown. A hyggelig Christmas begins and ends with family and friends. Those are the people we feel safe around. The ones that makes us feel comfortable. They know us and we enjoy spending time with them because we love them. Time and time again, the quality of our social relations has been shown to be one of the best predictors for our emotional well-being. In our everyday lives, many of us feel we see too little of our loved ones. Christmas is an opportunity to make up for that, to gather around a table full of delicious treats in order to enjoy life and each other's company. That is the key ingredient in a hyggelig Christmas. People all over the world do the same each year. But only in Danish homes do people draw a collective sigh of relief when someone reassures the others that this is hyggeligt. In that moment, both hosts and guests feel that Christmas has arrived. The proper spirit of hygge has been achieved. But family is not enough in order to put together a hyggelig Christmas. Even though a lot of people mostly see friends and family during the holidays, this can be done all year round. Traditions. Food. Around Christmas time, there are certain rituals and traditions which must be adhered to in order to achieve hygge. A Danish Christmas needs the proper decorations, food, and activities in order to be considered a real hyggelig Christmas. First, there is the food. Danish food. Heavy Danish food. If you search the internet for long enough, I am convinced you will find diets that include almost everything. There are diets where you only eat meat, only eat fat, water diets, diets with a lot of carbs, and diets without any. There are diets of vegetables and even diets of sunlight. Nonetheless, I have yet to come across a diet that would accept Danish Christmas food. The main protagonist in the Christmas menu is the meat, which is either roast, pork, or duck, often both. It will be accompanied by boiled potatoes covered with a caramel mass, stewed sweet and sour red cabbage, gravy, and pickled gherkins. Some have cream-stewed cabbage, sausages, and various types of bread too. To complete the feast, we have a truly Danish invention, risalamande. It comes from the French risalamande, and this makes it sound fancier. It's half part whipped cream, half part boiled rice, with finely chopped almonds and topped with hot cherry sauce. Eating risalamande is not just a delicious experience though, it is very much social, because hidden in the big bowl of dessert is one whole almond. Usually, when everybody has been served their bowl of risalamande, a silence spreads across the room. Eyes shift from person to person. It is more reminiscent of a poker game or a Western-style shootout than a Christmas tradition. Who has got the almond? Whoever finds it gets a present and will be the subject of comments about always being lucky And somehow it does actually seem that some people are better at getting the almond than others. Soon, the silence is replaced by inquisitive questions. You've got the almond, haven't you? You're hiding it, just like last year, aren't you? The aim of the one who has found the almond is to hide it and deny having found it in order to lure the others into eating everything in the bowl. It becomes a kind of perverted eating contest. Around Christmas time, eating a dessert turns into a hugely social activity in itself. Do you think it sounds delicious? You should taste it. Fortunately for our bodies, we only get to feast on these dishes once a year. Decorations. No hygge Christmas is complete without the proper decorations. These may vary even more than the food, as every family has inherited their own decorations from parents and grandparents. But they may include figures of Nisse, an elf or gnome, animals, and Father Christmas, mini nativity figures, or cornets or woven hearts made of glossy paper. Woven hearts are rarely seen outside Denmark. Their origin has been attributed to Hans Christian Andersen, who was a master at paper cuttings. They come in various colors and have different motifs, and every Dane knows how to craft at least a simple one. Then there are candles, of course. When 100% of the time spent at home in December is during the hours of darkness, you need various sources of lighting. And candles are hyggelig. A specific Danish version of a Christmas candle is the Advent candle, painted like a tape measure with dates from December 1st to the 24th. Each day, the corresponding piece of candle is burned away. The calendar light is literally the centerpiece of the family. It constitutes a natural point and time slot to assemble around. And besides, it feeds the Danes' fetish for the countdown to Christmas. Countdown to hygge. The Advent candle is not the only way Danes count down to the ultimate hygge day of the year. Danish children have Advent calendars and open a flap each day to unveil a Christmas symbol or motif. A more extravagant version is a series of boxes of wood or cardboard which contain, say, a small Christmas bauble or a sweet. Some families even have present calendars, and children get a small present each day until Christmas, when they will get even more. And then there are the TV calendars. They are mostly for kids and provide a hyggelig activity to make their wait for the big day tolerable. Every year, most TV stations have their own julekalender, a story which is usually related to Christmas and has 24 connected episodes, reaching a climax on December 24th, when the adults are busy with last-minute preparations. Emphasizing that Christmas really is the time for hygge, one of the recurring characters in these shows is Lunde, a nisse or gnome who usually greets people by saying hygge hejsa, hygge hello. A new TV calendar is produced every year, and there is always an old one that is showing again. And while children will be laughing and having a good time watching these shows, you will often find the adults trying to catch a glimpse of the screen and smiling to themselves, reminiscing about being a child and watching the very same scenes while waiting for the coming of Christmas Day. Naturally, these things are in themselves hyggelig, but they are also important because they are traditions, and traditions matter to hygge. Traditions remind us of all the good times we have had with our family and friends. We feel there is a part of Christmas or hygge hidden in these actions and items which have been part of our whole life. Without them, something is missing. Christmas just would not be the same. The race to relax. Getting a bit out of breath, hearing about all the necessities for a Danish Christmas. I completely get it. All the things I have sketched out here do contribute to the pressure for hygge around Christmas. If people are not feeling the hygge, something is not right. Christmas is deemed a failure. All the preparations for hyggelig Christmas are quite often stressful and indeed not very hyggelig. Now, this may seem a bit odd, but it actually makes sense. Hygge is only possible if it stands in opposition to something which is not hygge. It is essential for the concept of hygge that it constitutes an alternative to everything that is not hyggelig in our everyday lives. For a brief moment, hygge protects us against that which is not hyggelig. There must be anti-hygge for hygge to be valuable. Life might seem stressful. It might seem unsafe and unfair. Life is often centered on money and social status. But life is none of these things in moments of hygge. Remember my friend who commented that the only way our time in the cabin could be more hyggelig was if there was a storm outside? This is hygge. The more it sets the here and now apart from the tough realities of the outside world, the more valuable it becomes. In this way, achieving hygge would not be possible without all the bustle and turmoil leading up to Christmas. It is the awareness of all the money, stress, work, and time being sacrificed in the preparations for Christmas that enables hygge as a climatic alternative. Hygge is postponed in order to be accomplished. Knowing friends and family have worked hard all December in order to get together and not focus on work, money, and all things profane is the meaning of hygge. But even then, Christmas includes moments that threaten to compromise hygge. As hygge is about letting go of the everyday, the focus on, for example, money and the giving and exchanging of presents, always threatens to contaminate the pure and pristine hygge. Giving and receiving presents may cause someone to feel exposed or emphasize difference in status. Receiving too big a gift makes you feel in debt to the giver, while giving too big a gift is frowned upon as it asserts the giver's superior position. Demonstrations of power are not welcome in hygge. In Denmark, Christmas hygge is egalitarian. It is about relations and community, not individuals trying to bring attention to themselves. It is not possible to achieve hygge if anybody feels excluded or superior to anybody else. Therefore, the best Christmases are the ones where everything outlined in this chapter is achieved and where the danger element of gift-giving is eliminated by striking a balance between giving and receiving. Fortunately, once the presents have been exchanged, there are plenty of gift-free, hyggelig days of relaxation and lunches until New Year's Eve, when hygge is again sacrificed so that even more preparations can be made. Chapter 12. Sommerhygge. The living is easy. While summer may not encourage the use of candles and fireplaces, summer can be hyggelig too. Summer is the smell of new-mown grass, suntanned skin, sunscreen, and salt water. It is reading in the shadow of a tree, enjoying the long summer nights, and standing around the barbecue with your friends. Summer doesn't mean you have to turn down the hygge. It's just a different kind of hygge from that of autumn or winter. It involves making use of the sun and warmth and nature, but summer hygge still builds on the key elements of togetherness and good food. Here are five suggestions you can use to get the hygge going during summer. 1. Think cider house rules. There are few things more hyggelig than spending a day in an orchard picking fruit. About once a year, my friends and I go to Fejø, a small island in the southern part of Denmark, known for its apples. There are rows and rows of apple and plum trees. If we hit the island late in the summer, the opal plums are ripe and the Filippa apples are ready. Spending one day at the orchard will allow you to hygge another day by making jams or preserving the fruit you picked in other ways. This year, I hope we can have a go at making cider. Maybe it's time for that pantry party we talked about earlier. There are many pick-your-own farms scattered throughout the countryside in the UK, US, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. 2. Throw a barbecue for family and friends. Nothing gets the hygge going faster than lighting the barbecue. This is a type of hygge which is practiced in most parts of the world. Invite your friends and family over and get cooking together. Light the barbecue, and while you wait for the embers to be just the right temperatures, have a game of croquet or the Viking game cup, which essentially is hitting sticks with other sticks. 3. Join or build a community garden. At the moment, community gardens seem to be popping up everywhere, and with good reason. They are a wonderful way of getting the hyggelig atmosphere of a village into a bigger city. Tending to your tomatoes while having a chat over coffee with the other gardeners is both hyggelig and meditative. In addition, it brings people in the local neighborhood together and fosters the development of community spirit, What's not to like?
Building community gardens was one of the proposals recommended by the Happiness Research Institute when we were working on a town just outside Copenhagen, trying to come up with ideas that would improve the social fabric and reduce isolation and loneliness in the community. But it was such a great idea that I thought we should build one ourselves. So we did. Across the street from our office is a church which has excess land for around 20 raised plant beds. We ordered 7 tons of dirt and spent one Sunday afternoon building the garden and, of course, to top off the hygge, we finished the day with a barbecue.
4. Picnics by the beach.
Summer is a wonderful time of year to go to your local farmer's market and fill your basket with strawberries, cherries, and watermelon. Add some bread and cheese to the basket, and you're good to go. Bring all your friends, or just that one special person, and find a spot near the sea. This is the recipe for one of the most hyggelig activities you can do throughout the summer. A whole day can easily pass just in conversation, reading, and enjoying the freedom of not having to do anything.
5. Cargo bike around.
What better way to experience your city or neighborhood than cycling around it? Of course, being from Copenhagen, I might be biased in this regard. So, if you have the good fortune, as I do, to know some people who own a cargo bike, you might be able to borrow it for the day. Put your kids, your spouse, your parents, your best friend, your dog, or someone visiting your town in the box of the cargo bike. A maximum of 2 people is advised. And get biking. Of course, you could walk or drive, but the cargo bike can be turned into a movable fortress of hygge. Bring pillows, a blanket, treats, music, picnic basket, whatever tickles your fancy. This is the perfect way to spend a summer afternoon. But with an extra warm blanket and a good sweater, this can also work as a year-round activity. In fact, one winter, I biked a beautiful Swedish woman around under the Copenhagen Christmas lights in an attempt to woo her. The attempt failed. The timing wasn't right, which I believe translates into "I'm just not that into you" in every language. But I'm sure it wasn't because she thought our date lacked hygge.
Bikes and happiness.
In addition to hygge, Hans Christian Andersen, Lego, and Danish design, Denmark is known for its love of bikes. Of course, it is easy to be a nation of cyclophiliacs when the country's highest point is less than 200 meters and when the city invests heavily in infrastructure for cyclists. Car taxes of 150 to 180% probably also help. Nevertheless, Danes love their bikes and cycling. In Copenhagen, 45% of those who live, study, or work in the city cycle to their place of education or employment. Roughly a third of people working in the city but living outside choose to commute by bicycle. I think most of us appreciate that cycling is an easy way to weave a bit of exercise into our daily routine and is eco- and wallet-friendly. However, that is not why Copenhageners bike. We do it because it's easy and convenient. It is simply the fastest way to get from A to B. But there is an additional advantage that may be overlooked and under-communicated. Biking makes people happier. A comprehensive study carried out in 2014 by UEA's Norwich Medical School and the Center for Health Economics at the University of York, and based on nearly 18,000 adult commuters, found that people who bike to work are happier than those who drive or use public transport. You might argue that we can't be sure that it's cycling that causes happiness. It could just as well be the other way around, that the happier people are, the more inclined they are to cycle. True. But this is where it gets interesting. When the researchers of the study analyzed the results, they discovered that the people who over the years had changed from commuting by car or bus to cycling or going on foot became happier after the switch. And to further bombard you with the compelling arguments to give the bike a try, another study from McGill University in Montreal also found that those who cycled to work were more satisfied with their commute, even though it could make their commute longer. And if happiness isn't enough of a motivation, let me tell you that according to a Dutch, cycle lovers too, study undertaken by the University of Utrecht, Switching from driving to riding a bike in your daily commute adds 3 to 14 months to your life expectancy. And a Danish study concluded, perhaps unsurprisingly, that children who cycled to school were significantly fitter than those who were driven.
Okay, you might say, so cycling will make me healthier and happier, but what good are health and happiness? They can't buy me money. Well, you might not be the ideal target group for my next argument, but here goes. If you bike, we all win. It's good for the community.
Cycling is not only beneficial for the individual and his or her well-being and health. It's an indicator of the degree of neighbors' and locals' sense of community. A Swedish study of 2012 of more than 21,000 people found that people who traveled by car generally attended fewer social events and family gatherings. Furthermore, the drivers had comparatively less trust in other people. Those who choose to walk or cycle to their destinations attended more social events and had a comparatively greater trust in others. This doesn't mean that swapping your car for a bike will instantly improve how much you trust other people. The researchers behind the study point towards the increase in commuting distance as an explanation. Because of a more flexible and accessible labor market, people find jobs further afield. In turn, this means that people's social networks are spread further geographically, which reduces their sense of belonging and engagement in their neighborhood. In other words, if a city is designed in a way that makes a long drive to work necessary, we harm the social health of that city. If a lot of people cycle, it's probably an indication that you live in a healthy neighborhood. This is something that should be seriously considered in urban planning if you want to ensure neighborhood togetherness and trust among locals.
Chapter 13. Five Dimensions of Hygge.
While hygge can be an intangible and abstract concept, I do believe that we can use all our senses to detect it. Hygge has a taste, a sound, a smell, and a texture, and hopefully you will start to see hygge all around.
The taste of hygge.
Taste is an important element of hygge, because it often involves eating something, and that something cannot be too fresh, alternative, or challenging in any way. The taste of hygge is almost always familiar, sweet, and comforting. If you want to make a cup of tea more hyggelig, you add honey. If you want to make a cake more hyggelig, you add icing. And if you want your stew to be more hyggelig, you add wine.
The sound of hygge.
The small sparks and dynamic crackles of burning wood are probably the most hyggelig sounds there are. But don't worry if you live in a flat and cannot have an open fire without also facing great risk of death. Many sounds can be hyggelig. Actually, hygge mainly has to do with the absence of sounds, which enables you to hear even very quiet noises, such as raindrops on the roof, wind blowing outside the window, the sound of trees waving in the wind, or wooden planks that yield when you walk on them. Also, the sound of a person drawing, cooking, or knitting could be hyggelig. Any sound of a safe environment will be the soundtrack of hygge. For example, the sound of thunder can be very hyggeligt if you are inside and feel safe. If outside, not so much.
Smells like hygge.
Have you ever smelled something that takes you back to a time and a place where you felt safe? Or smelled something that, more than a memory, gives you a flashback of how the world used to look when you were a child? Or maybe the smell of something provokes strong feelings of security and comfort, like the aroma coming from a bakery, of apple trees from your childhood garden, or maybe the familiar scent of your parents' house. What makes a smell hyggelig differs very much from person to person, because smells relate a situation to one's experience with that smell in the past. For some people, the smell of cigarettes in the morning is the most hyggelig thing there is. To others, the smell may provoke nausea and headaches. One common element of all the smells of hygge is that they remind us of safety and being cared for. We use smell to sense whether something is safe to eat, but we also use it to intuit whether a place is safe and how alert we should be. The smell of hygge is the smell that tells you to put your guard down completely. The smell of cooking, the smell of a blanket you use at home, or the smell of a certain place we perceive as safe, can be very hyggeligt because it reminds us of a state of mind we experienced when we felt completely safe. What does hygge feel like? As I mentioned earlier, letting your fingers run across a wooden surface, a warm ceramic cup, or through the hairs of the skin of a reindeer brings out the hygge. Old homemade stuff that has taken a lot of time to make is always more hyggelig than bought and new stuff. And small things are always more hyggelig than big things. If the slogan for the US is the bigger the better, the slogan for Denmark is the smaller the more hyggeligt. In Copenhagen, almost all the buildings stand only 3 or 4 stories high. New houses made out of concrete, glass and steel do not stand a chance against the hygge factor in these old buildings. Anything made by real craftsmanship, objects created out of wood, ceramics, wool, leather and so on, is hyggeligt. Shiny metal and glass are not hyggeligt, though they can be if they're old enough. The rustic organic surface of something imperfect and something that has been or will be affected by age appeals to the touch of hygge. Also, the feeling of being inside something warm in a place where it is cold is very different from just being warm. It gives the feeling of being comfortable in a hostile environment. Seeing hygge. Hygge is very much about light, as we have said. Too bright is not hyggeligt. But hygge is also very much about taking your time. This can be accentuated by watching very slow movements or things. For example, gently falling snow, or the lazy flames from an open fire. In short, slow, organic movements and dark, natural colors are hyggelig. The sight of a bright, sterile hospital or watching fast-moving vehicles on a highway is not. Hygge is dimmed, rustic, and slow. The sixth sense of hygge. Hygge is about feeling safe. Hence, hygge is an indicator that you trust the ones you are with and where you are. And the feeling of hygge is an indicator of your feeling of pleasure when someone tells you to go with your gut feeling, that you have expanded your comfort zone to include other people and feel it can be completely yourself around other people. So hygge can be tasted, heard, smelled, touched and seen. But most importantly, hygge is felt. In the beginning, I mentioned Winnie the Pooh, and I think his wisdom still holds true. You don't spell love, you feel it. This brings us to the final theme of the book, happiness. Chapter 14. Hygge and happiness. Today, political leaders from around the world are expressing an interest in why some societies are happier than others. At the same time, countries are taking steps to measure their success as a society, not only from how much the economy grows, but also from how much their lives are improved. Not just by the standard of living, but by quality of life. This is one of the consequences of the paradigm shift away from gross domestic product as the dominant indicator for progress in recent years. However, the idea is not new. As Robert Kennedy pointed out more than 40 years ago, the gross national product does not allow for the health of our children, the quality of their education, or the joy of their play. It does not include the beauty of our poetry or the strength of our marriages, the intelligence of our public debate or the integrity of our public officials. It measures everything, in short, except that which makes life worthwhile. Lately, this has increased the interest in and number of happiness surveys, and it seems that Denmark comes out on top almost every time. About once a year, some new study confirms Denmark's status as a happiness superpower, wrote a journalist at the New York Times in 2009. Since then, the statement has become even truer. The World Happiness Report, which is commissioned by the United Nations, have now been published 4 times. Denmark has been in first place every time except once, when the country was beaten into 3rd place. And the World Happiness Report is just one out of many rankings that put Denmark and Copenhagen at the top of the lists about happiness and the country's livability. The same pattern is evident when the OECD looks at life satisfaction, when the European Social Survey looks at happiness, and Monocle magazine has several times ranked Copenhagen as the world's most livable city. Nowadays, well-being rankings are only news in Denmark when the country doesn't make first place. In addition, most Danes can't help but smile a little when they hear that Denmark is the happiest country in the world. They are well aware that Denmark was not first in the queue when weather was handed out, and that, sitting in traffic on a wet February morning, they hardly look like the world's happiest people. So why are the people in Denmark so happy? The happy Danes. As discussed, international surveys frequently name Denmark as the happiest country in the world, and this has naturally prompted an increasing interest on the part of happiness researchers. What are the reasons behind the high levels of happiness in Denmark? At the Happiness Research Institute, we have tried to answer this question in the report, The Happy Danes, exploring the reasons for the high levels of happiness in Denmark. Briefly, there are many reasons. Several factors influence why some people and countries are happier than others. Genetics, our relationships, health, income, job, sense of purpose, and freedom. But one of the main reasons why Denmark does so well in international happiness surveys is the welfare state, as it reduces uncertainty, worries, and stress in the population. You can say that Denmark is the happiest country in the world, or you can say that Denmark is the least unhappy country in the world. The welfare state is really good, not perfect, but good, at reducing extreme unhappiness. Universal and free healthcare, free university education, and relatively generous unemployment benefits go a long way towards reducing unhappiness. This has a particular significance for those who are less well off, a segment of society which is happier in Denmark than in other wealthy countries. Furthermore, there is a high level of trust in Denmark. Notice all the pushchairs parked outside cafes when the parents are inside drinking coffee. There's a high level of freedom. Danes report really high levels in terms of feeling in control over their lives. There's a high level of wealth and good governance and a well-functioning civil society. These factors, however, don't set Denmark apart from other Nordic countries. Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Iceland also enjoy relatively high levels of welfare. This is why all the Nordic countries are usually found in the top 10 of happiness rankings. However, maybe the instance of hygge is what sets Denmark apart from the rest of the Nordic countries. I think hygge and happiness might be linked, as hygge may be the pursuit of everyday happiness, and some of the key components of hygge are key drivers of happiness. Let's look at some of them. Hygge as social support. Given what we've just heard, we can now perhaps explain three quarters of the reasons why some countries are happier than others. Factors such as generosity, freedom, GDP, good governance, and healthy life expectancy. But the factor that has the biggest effect on our happiness is social support. What is meant by this is simply, do people have someone in their network they can rely on in times of need? Yes or no? It might not be the best or most nuanced way of measuring our social support systems, but it is the data we have across as many countries as are covered by the World Happiness Report. One of the good reasons for the high levels of happiness in Denmark is the good work-life balance, which allows people to make time for family and friends. According to the OECD Better Life Index, Danes have more free time than all the other OECD members. And according to the European Social Survey, a third of all Danes report feeling calm and peaceful all or most of the time, while the percentages are 23 for Germany, 15 in France, and 14 in the United Kingdom. So policies matter, but maybe hygge also fosters a special way of being together with your loved ones. In the chapter on togetherness, we touched on the link between relationships, hygge, and happiness. This link cannot be overstated. In 1943, the Russian-American psychologist Abraham Maslow developed a model called the Pyramid of Human Needs and a theory that we must fill our needs from the bottom of the pyramid upwards. The most elementary needs are physiological: food, water, and sleep, and security. But then come our social needs, our need for love and belonging. Without having these needs covered, we will not be able to move on to fulfilling our needs for self-esteem and self-actualization. Today, when happiness researchers analyze the common denominators among those who consider themselves happy, a pattern emerged without exception that these people have meaningful and positive social relationships. Studies also show that when individuals experience social isolation, many of the same brain regions become active that are active in the experience of physical pain.